I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. The town square is back. At least it's back for a growing movement of architects and planners called the New Urbanists. They believe in walkable, mixed-use communities like Baldwin Park in Orlando and Celebration in Kissimmee. New Urbanists are helping transform a state where the economy is dependent on growth and development and where the real estate industry is experiencing a painful adjustment. This week on Intersection, an interview with Elizabeth Plater-Zyberg, who helped start the New Urbanism movement along with her husband Andres Duany. One potential future for Florida's communities ahead on Intersection. So much of America, and especially Florida, is loaded with communities made up of sprawling residential subdivisions and strip malls along busy arterial roads. A lot of it looks the same and is not distinguishable from similar forms, even in different places. That's not the case, though, with all cities and towns. And understanding what creates a unique sense of place is what drives Elizabeth Plater-Zyberg. She's trying to figure out what the future will look like in a very physical and practical way. Elizabeth Plater-Zyberg is dean of the University of Miami School of Architecture, which is starting a Bachelor of Architecture program in Orlando. She's also one half of the DPZ design firm founded with her husband, Andres Duany. Together, Duany and Plater-Zyberg have helped to found the urban design movement called New Urbanism. Elizabeth Plater-Zyberg, welcome to Intersection.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to talk with you. So I wanted to start off just asking, what is a community and what determines if it's functioning well?
The people determine whether it's functioning well. And communities may take, in fact, many different physical forms. But there are forms of arrangement, arranging buildings and roads in such a way that it facilitates communities and facilitates healthy communities.
How does it do that?
So the suburbia that you just described does not lack in a sense of community. People actually go to great efforts to maintain community and to maintain relations in that kind of geographical layout. But if you had a more walkable kind of arrangement, as we know from our traditional towns and cities, then one can imagine how that might be facilitated, particularly with regard to diversity of people, ages, incomes, uses, having things close by that you need on a daily basis, enabling children to walk to school, enabling the elderly to get around to see each other, and so on.
Do those elements contribute to making a sense of place, or is that different? And what do you need necessarily to create that thing that we call a sense of place that helps us identify and know that we're in a specific location?
Yeah. There is a difference between sense of place and sense of community. You can have a sense of place in some kind of landscape that may have no community. The Grand Canyon is a place of great character and uniqueness. But when you unite sense of place and community, you can have a really terrific situation. And so I think many of us remember childhood places that had a great sense of place and a sense of community. And it's very much about the way the physical environment is not only physically laid out, but in fact what the design elements of it are. And sometimes some very subtle design components or techniques which can make a place of character. And so the suburbia you describe, the kind of it looks the same almost anywhere you are place, could be a place of great character with more attention paid to regional issues, whether it's the regional landscape, regional materials, local design, local endeavors in making the place. There are just so many things. It goes so far as to be related to the way the whole financial and economic development picture looks, in which you drive down the strip and all you see are national chains. And you wonder where the local business is, somebody starting up their own restaurant or their own shop. So that kind of regional or local character can contribute to a sense of place and a sense of community.
Now, you've been associated with this term new urbanism that gets thrown around a lot. And if you're not familiar with it, many people point to the community used in the movie The Truman Show, which was filmed in the Florida panhandle town of Seaside, which you helped to create. And so that idea of having almost what looks like a picturesque or a perfect community often gets idealized as what a new urbanist place might be. But for you, what does new urbanism mean, and what are you trying to create, and is that term new urbanism still appropriate?
Well, the term was a conscious invention by a group of people just about 20 years ago. We're celebrating the 20th anniversary of the Congress for the New Urbanism with the intention of bringing attention to suburban sprawl and the attendant decanting of cities, which is the dominant character of the American built landscape. We have emptied cities to make suburbia, sometimes including from the Rust Belt to the Sun Belt, including over that long distance. But the New Urbanism produced a charter of 27 principles, which call our attention to what the important principles are or what the important issues are and how they are, in fact, different from what we've been doing in the last much of the last century. So you have actually in the Orlando area within striking distance, you have both old traditional examples of what we have called the new urbanism, as well as new places. So you have wonderful old neighborhoods just attached to downtown, which are great examples of what we would identify as new urbanism. And then there are the new places like Baldwin Park Village or Hale Plantation up near Gainesville, or in Tampa, old parts of the old neighborhoods of Tampa as well.
Or Celebration even.
Or Celebration, absolutely. And so the new urbanism really was an attempt to get people to pay attention to those old wonderful places as a model for new community making, which of course, we've been trying to do for the last 20 years.
And so many people, when that movement started, especially, it's broadened out now into the ongoing 20 years. But when it started, a lot of architects driving that movement. And so I think a lot of people who look at these new urbanist communities see the attention that was paid to small details and those sorts of elements. But there was something of a backlash sometimes to that because these new towns were created with such attention to detail that people walked in and it almost seemed too perfect. And I've read about this, and it seems like, you know, part of that was the fact that it was so new. It seemed too perfect. It hadn't been lived in yet. And I wonder, how do you think those communities that you're talking about stand up to that challenge of maybe being too perfect or not really being authentic?
Well, first of all, some of the early ones are aging very well. You will find rust on the roofs at Seaside, for instance. So it's not
quite next to the water.
Yeah, not quite as slick as it was. But there is an understanding that they're intended to age well and to be ageless and timeless in a time when everyone is so accustomed and perhaps fearful these days of change. You know, I think it's interesting that you describe those kind of clean and fresh beginnings as something that people reacted to with disbelief.
People saw it with skepticism.
And because that's quite a commentary on what they were accustomed to in the built environment, that they couldn't imagine that that could be real, that you could make a beautiful place that would have a great deal of excellence and variety in design, that somehow that seemed to be, you know, no longer available to the human race. And if we've shown people that that's possible and that that can be continued and that it can age gracefully, then that would be very satisfying.
You know, talking about the movement New Urbanism and the emphasis of architects in that movement, one of the other criticisms maybe has been that with so much emphasis on architecture and building alignments and how the streets are shaped, those sorts of things, that you know, the element, the role of people is maybe sometimes overlooked or felt to be overlooked in that movement, and that it doesn't necessarily account for how people really behave and how they'll really interact. I guess maybe to boil it down, is it a question of environment versus how the people are going to behave, and can you really influence that through buildings?
Well, you know, we live in an age of research, and there is research being done in universities and research institutes on almost any topic you can name. But one of the areas in which there really hasn't been that much is the built environment and what effect it has on human behavior. However, what little research has been done has pointed to, and some of it may, some of the experience may be anecdotal, but there's more and more data that is appearing from real research, which points to walkable communities as being places that do engender a sense of community, where it may be by the people are choosing to live there because they understand what it can provide in terms of community support, but also outright health, bodily health, physical health, in when walking is part of daily destinations. It's not just a recreational activity. So, and that is, in fact, receiving quite a bit of study. So there's been much less study on the beneficial effects of a beautiful environment on one's health and so on. But I think that there is a terrific amount to observe in the built environment that you can learn from. And, you know, you mentioned architects. One of the reasons that architects have been a little bit sometimes cranky about the new urbanism is that, number one, they worry that it's in some way restrictive, because right now there is such a great emphasis on individual creativity and innovation in per building, in every single building. And the architects who are held up to public acclaim are the people who are making these incredibly figural
individual statements.
Yeah, individuals. Individual statements, yeah. And I'm not denigrating them. Those are great buildings. They belong in our communities. But there's a terrific amount of building that is really making the places for human beings to have their daily life. And I think that's what we're what the new urbanists are interested in, is how you form those places in order to engender social interdependence, integration, and support in ways that maybe would even make us less dependent on government or less demanding on the economy or all of the things that are so front and center these days, that a great sense of and place of community could speak to quite effectively.
My guest is architect, community designer, and urban theorist Elizabeth Plater-Zeiberg. What do you think about communities like Baldwin Park in Orlando or Celebration near Disney? Are those authentic communities to you? Well, you can tell us about it on the WMFE Facebook and Twitter pages. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. I'm Mark Simpson. A lot of the communities that you've helped to design were created from scratch. We're talking about whole new towns. And I wonder, is that still possible to do today in this economy? And does that mean maybe that by creating those new towns, are you making a commentary on what we've currently got, maybe saying it's not worth it to try to fix it?
Well, you know, and yes, of course, that brings up the issue. Shouldn't we be rebuilding and infilling the older places that I mentioned earlier that we've been decanting? And yes, that's true. And a great deal of new urbanist effort has gone into existing places, into cities, into retrofitting suburbia, even some of the newer places that we've built. But the new communities, many of which already have many years on them, offered an opportunity at a time when the principles of the new urbanism, compact, walkable, mixed use, were just not possible for various reasons, market reasons, regulations, a tremendous amount of preclusions to building traditional places again. And, for instance, Seaside, which was among the first, was possible mostly because there was no regulatory framework It began on a very small incremental basis. Robert Davis sold one lot and built two houses. It is a model, an economic model for our time of incremental development.
And let's just say for people who don't know, this is one of the first
new celebrating urbanist 30, kind of communities. 30 years of age from its inception this year. But those new places provided the models. And there's a new town that DPZ, my firm, designed outside of Washington called Kentlands, which inspired the city that it was part of, or on the outskirts of, Gaithersburg, to take a look again at its historic center and say, well, you know, if it's working under current market conditions and it's like the old stuff, we can renovate and restore our downtown and we can bring people back to it. So it had a lot of beneficial effects and, in fact, enabled looking back at and reappreciating the older places. So programs, very successful housing programs like HOPE 6, a U.S. housing and urban development funding program for mixed-use housing, which followed the principles of the new urbanism, has been very successful in, for instance, rebuilding large tracts of public housing around the country. And they're now mixed-use, mixed-income communities in a way that they never were before.
What do you think about the way things look today? You've spent the day in Orlando driving around. You've seen what it looks like. Is there anything wrong with the way things are built out today? Or does it all need to be changed into this new urbanist ideal of denser buildings, more compact sizes, that sort of thing?
Well, you know, I think one thing that must be acknowledged about suburban America is that it coincided with tremendous economic development and growth in this country. And many people will say that the mobility of being able to drive everywhere on a moment's notice, of long distances traversed easily, of easy development in undeveloped land, any number of things, the scale, that all of that contributed to the good life that we experienced in the second half of the 20th century. But at some point, you have to look at that and say, can that continue? I mean, at some point, the extension, the traffic congestion, the scale of things just becomes overwhelming. It's vehicle dependent. It's automobile dependent. It's not friendly to transit or walking or any of the other things we might consider as we realize that the resources that enabled us to build that are becoming more and more difficult to come by. This is, of course, a big discussion that's going on.
It sounds like
worldwide.
People like Richard Florida writing about calling it the Great Reset.
Yeah. And so I think what the new urbanists can bring to this picture, besides kind of agreeing that there are some crises facing us, it's very easy to list all of that, is to say there are ways to restructure what we've done without starting over. And in fact, my colleague in the firm, Galina Takcheva, has written a book called Sprawl Repair, which lays out a very simple step-by-step process of looking at, and it has to be done at a regional scale, in which you pick the places to
strategically
remake.
Is what you're talking about. But what's the overall effect, though, of having piecemeal application of that? Is the idea that eventually it will all come together and the whole thing will be transformed, or will you just have clusters of what is perceived to be better and clusters that are perceived to be worse?
What you will have, what we would look forward to one having, is a series of densified centers, urban centers, which have a rationale, are rationally placed according to both environmental reasons and transportation reasons, so that these might be set up in such a way that a transit system might be able to work. And they would be large and dense enough that, in fact, they would support the transit system. And they would also be walkable, interesting, and beautiful enough that people would want to be there, including businesses would want to be there, much in the way that Richard Florida talks about where people want to be.
Is it difficult, though, in today's economy to do that? Because Tough to get financing, tough to get the money equation, maybe even the financing structure is so accustomed to dealing with the suburban model that there's a lot of challenges to trying to do it financially.
Yeah. And we have become accustomed to the big slug of money to do the big project, even some of the mixed-use, new urban downtown centers. We're built on that with that kind of assistance. But I think one of the things to remember is that the new urbanism started with the idea that places are made incrementally and that many people can participate in the making of them. What you have to do is...
You don't have to just bulldoze the whole thing, is what you're saying.
What you have to do is facilitate that kind of incremental approach by making sure that the regulatory structure allows it, that any kinds of investment in transit, the sort of thing... the money that comes down from the federal government, for instance, or environmental restoration, that that's aligned to enable these places to exist, and then that you open the door for everyone to participate piece by piece.
We're talking with Elizabeth Plater-Zyberg on Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. You can always send us an email to intersection@wmfe.org. You work very closely with your husband, Andres Dewani, who's another major player in designing communities and helping to create a sense of place. He's something of a polarizing figure, though. Some people think he's a genius or a madman or even an instigator, maybe all those combined. And I just wonder, what's it like to work with him? What's that creative process like?
Good question. Well, first of all, it's incredibly exciting to work with him. And I think that everyone in the firm is there in large part because of his leadership. So his willingness to stand on principle, first of all, to make the observations, to do the analysis, to ask the questions.
And I think it should be said he's not afraid to stand up even in public settings and say tough things that people don't always want to hear or agree with.
Yeah. You know, he always turns around and he says, "You can and look, I was right." So I would say one of the most important lessons about working with him is that whatever those difficult moments are, they are incredibly worth it because he understands the big picture and what the goal is. And he's not worried about the impediments along the way. His eyes are on that picture of changing the world. That is not done lightly. It has an awful lot to do with historical knowledge as well as knowledge of contemporary methods and realities.
You know, who's leading right now in designing communities? Is it in the U.S. or is it somewhere else in the world? Are we still on the cutting edge of this idea, this concept here, or is someone else taking the lead on what's happening?
Well, you know, there are very interesting things going on around the world, ranging from places that are being made with great capital investment. I'm thinking of some of the new cities in the Middle East, where no holds have been barred to even try to make green sustainable, using the latest sustainability technologies.
Dubai is an example.
Yeah. And then the famous green city also on the Saudi Peninsula, which in fact is being built a lot like Disney World. There's an underground where all the utilities and the services take place, and then the people are on top of that. There's an enormous scale of new building that's going on in places like Singapore and China, and some of it's extremely flashy and extremely exciting from an architectural perspective, or a kind of unique experience. And on the other hand, there are millions of people living in informal settlements that have their own kind of wisdom about what works under minimalist mode, you know, in minimal conditions. And I think that we're somewhere in between, in which we're saying in this country, there, first of all, we have a very privileged beginning, but we have the responsibility to point the way for other parts of the world. Because, in fact, for a long time, it was the American model that was being imitated in terms of automobile dependence. And sprawling, constantly new places.
Can you apply this to the developing world or to poorer places? Can you design good communities in poorer settings?
Absolutely. You might, the same principles of walking, mixed use, those places are compact by definition. An informal settlement is compact and dense by definition. It has mixed use. There are tiny little shops and in people's houses.
But is there the political interest or will to achieve that? Because that's one thing the U.S. Trying to do it has come up against a wall there.
Are you speaking about the informal settlements?
I'm just thinking in developing countries.
Yeah. Well, because, the U.S. model has always, in other countries, has always been the kind of World Bank, let us give you a dam, or let us give you, a new high-rise in your downtown, or something that isn't really about the communities at that small scale. In fact, I think that's what the Great Reset, as Richard Florida says, gives us the opportunity to do, is to once again to be able to think in increments, smaller increments that are more malleable, flexible, allow for evolution, and in a sense much more community-oriented, individual and community-oriented, whether it's in the context of American urbanism and suburbanism or whether it's in taking an informal settlement that's been there for years and outside of Rio or in Haiti and saying, let's put infrastructure into this place because people are living here, and we'll make that public investment in such a way that then the individual private efforts to sustain themselves in those places are, reach a better quality of life, a better standard of living.
What's the future going to look like?
Who's to say? But I think we know what we would like it to look like. Very realistically, understanding what pre-exists in a place, this is no longer about starting over. We're living in a time which is no longer about starting over in new places, and neither is it about discarding old places. We're going to be remaking places. Whether it's still the leftover downtowns that haven't been addressed, such as some of the efforts that are going on in Detroit, places like Detroit today, or the suburbia that starts being out of date in places like Orlando. And so I think in the last 20 years of essentially new urbanists' work, and there's a terrific amount of research, publication, and practice experience, which has been done in really a very short time, there's a terrific amount of knowledge for remaking these places and how to make them not only with a great deal of hope and vision, but also a great deal of realism about what's there, who are the people who are part of this, and also what is the level of resources that we will have to work with from now on.
Elizabeth Plater-Zeiberg is dean of the University of Miami School of Architecture and a principal at the urban design firm DPZ. She and her husband, Andres Duany, helped start the movement called the New Urbanism. Elizabeth, thanks so much for your time.
You're welcome.
We've got a great web extra online at WMFE.org/intersection. Click on the link for this week's show, and you can hear what Elizabeth Plater-Zeiberg recommends to make the area right outside WMFE on Highway 50 more walkable. The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at the Florida Talks blog. Visit WMFE.org/intersection to find out more. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Amy Green is the assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.